Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia? Solartopia, Solartopia.
So we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
yeah, we did. We started to burn many things we found. This is Harvey Wasserman back for another hour with the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We got a great show with a great woman coming on, Stephanie Spear. She is the creator and publisher and editor of the Eco Watch website. I have a piece up today on the EcoWatch website about the massive march in Paris. That happened yesterday. I guess between 1 million and 2 million people marching in response to the horrible massacre at the Charlie Hebdo cartoon magazine. Absolutely ghastly event, and of course followed by yet another hostage murderous situation at a Jewish kosher supermarket. The rise of radical Islam here being completely hard to take, really. People dying left and right for no real reason whatsoever. And our colleagues, really, at Charlie Hebdo, a cartoon magazine, very anti-nuclear they were. My piece at EcoWatch, also at Common Dreams and a few other places, and posted at the PRN website, by the way, lays out the fact that the reality that Charlie Hebdo was actually a very anti-nuclear publication. They made some great cartoons about how insanely stupid nuclear power really is. And my piece raises the issue about terrorism at commercial nuclear power plants. I mean, the fact is that if these guys could just easily walk into a magazine and wipe out a dozen people in about, you know, a minute and a half, what's going to stop them from walking into a nuclear plant? We know from studies all over the world and in this country, in the United States, that these nuclear power plants are completely vulnerable. There is no way that anybody can stop a terrorist attack on a nuclear power plant, and God knows the devastation that could be done by an attack on atomic reactors, including, by the way, in 9/11, the alleged attackers at 9/11 of the World Trade Center, but involved in the situation where the two towers at the World Trade Center, Building 7, came crashing down. There had been discussion about them flying planes into the Indian Point reactors 35 miles north of Manhattan. God forbid that an airplane would have gone flying, or more, had gone flying into the reactors at Indian Point. The devastation would have been apocalyptic. The amount of radiation to escape, the people harmed, the property destroyed, the ecosystems absolutely gutted. It's really almost beyond comprehension what could happen if there were a successful terrorist attack at a commercial nuclear power plant here or anywhere in the world. There are around 430 in the world that are more or less licensed to operate, and more than 50 in France, just under 100 here in the United States. And so, you know, sooner or later, God help us, it is going to happen. Someone is going to attack a nuclear plant. It is not going to be stoppable. There's no way that you can stop a terrorist attack if it's done with any kind of professionalism on a nuclear power plant. And the amount of damage that could be done is incomprehensible to people, to the environment, and to the economy. So this piece at EcoWatch, edited by Stephanie Spear, our guest who's going to be coming on in a moment, lays all that out. I encourage you to go look at it. It's also a PRN. Should be posted there, if not yet soon. And let's think about that. As 1 million people, or 2 million people, somewhere in between, march in Paris in opposition to this insanity of terrorists going in and just killing people whenever they feel like it. We have to think about the reality that they could be hitting nuclear power plants. We have seen four commercial American-designed reactors explode at Fukushima, three major meltdowns. We still don't know where the cores are, the radioactive cores, at those nuclear plants at Fukushima. We had an explosion and a meltdown at Chernobyl with radiation spewed all over the world, killing at least 1 million people, according to the single most important major study of the situation at Chernobyl. We had an explosion at Three Mile Island in 1979, with radiation released into the atmosphere. We don't know how much. We don't know where it went. We don't know who was affected. I was one of the few journalists crazed enough to go into central Pennsylvania in the year after the accident and interview farmers who had been impacted by the radiation. Anybody who tells you that no one was harmed at Three Mile Island is either an industry stooge or has no idea what they're talking about, or is just completely in a fantasy world. People did die at Three Mile Island. They continue to die at Three Mile Island. And God forbid the terrorists of the type that did this slaughter at Charlie Hebdo in Paris had the wherewithal to take on a nuclear plant, of which there are more than 50 in Paris, in France. You know, we wouldn't be just having a horrible moment here about freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and small-scale terrorism. What we'd be looking at is an apocalypse of radiation spewing all over the earth, poisoning millions of people, destroying our ecosystems, gutting our economy. You know, Europe was heavily dosed by radiation from Chernobyl, which is one of the reasons the Germans have decided to shut their remaining reactors. The French society has been pulling back, thankfully, on atomic power. Everybody loves to say, or the industry advocates love to say, well, look how wonderful nuclear power is in France. It's a disaster in France. It's overpriced, unreliable, and a major threat to the future of the human race. Thankfully, horrible as these terrorists were that hit Charlie Hebdo, they did not hit one of the French nuclear power plants, or we would be talking a much different game right now. So that's the nature of my piece at EcoWatch. I love posting my stuff at EcoWatch. Stephanie Spear, who does such a great job publishing and editing EcoWatch, is going to be with us to talk in a moment. I want to talk also briefly before she comes on about the situation in Ohio. There is a nuclear plant on the Lake Erie, in Ohio, in the east of Toledo, called Davis-Bessie. And this reactor is absolutely a disaster in progress. It's not even waiting to happen. They leak boric acid onto the reactor pressure vessel and ate a hole through it that almost caused a major disaster. They have replaced, in a ridiculous manner, the containment dome at Davis-Bessie. All sorts of things continue to go wrong. It's a clone of Three Mile Island. It's the same class. Babcock and Wilcox built it. It's unprotectable and unprotected. Its safety systems are deficient. This reactor, Davis-Bessie, has been operating more than 40 years, or just about 40 years, and it's completely obsolete. It was designed in the 1960s, for God's sakes. I don't know how many of you are driving automobiles that are 40 years older that were designed in the 50s. But here we have this nuke running on Lake Erie, threatening the lake, threatening the people on the North Coast, threatening the economy, all for the sake of the private profit of a few rich, fat cat utility executives. And God forbid anything go wrong at Davis-Bessie, they are not responsible. They are protected by the federal law, by the Price-Anderson Act of 1957. And so if Davis-Bessie, God forbid, blows up and spews radiation all over the north coast of Ohio and into the Lake Erie and the other Great Lakes and kills thousands of people, does trillions of dollars worth of damage, wipes out the ecosystem. The owners of that reactor are not responsible. They are protected by the Price-Anderson Act of 1957. They wouldn't have to pay you or anybody else a dime for the loss of your property or your life or the health of your children or your children's children. They just continue to run this thing into the ground because they can make an extra couple of bucks on it. It should never have been built. It should never have reopened after the boric acid ate through its head. They should never have been allowed to replace the containment dome on the top of the thing, and they should not be allowed to continue to run this plant. Now, the First Energy, the corporate monster utility up on Lake Erie, has gone in front of the Public Utilities Commission, proving they have absolutely no shame whatsoever, and demanded that they be paid $3 billion by the ratepayers, $3 billion to continue to subsidize operations at Davis Bessie and to keep two or more 50-year-old coal plants burning. First Energy is completely irresponsible. They're just a big bully utility company. Their president, Anthony Alexander, makes God knows how much money. He's a personal friend of Dick Cheney. They absolutely do not care about the public health or safety in any way, shape, or form. And so they are demanding now, because they can't compete with natural gas or with fuel oil for burning and creating electricity, they're demanding that they be bailed out for $3 billion by the ratepayers to keep these this obsolete, horrifically dangerous reactor operating in these old coal plants. I mean, you know, it's hard to imagine a more chutzpah and a more uncaring, irresponsible, greedy operation than First Energy go ahead and doing all this. So it's in front of the Ohio Public Utilities Commission. The Ohio seems bound to determine to wind up in the 19th century. The first act of the current governor when he took office 4 years ago was to kill $400 million that had been set aside to restore passenger rail service to Columbus, Cincinnati, and Cleveland, which haven't had it since 1979, for God's sakes. And then they forced out a $2 billion wind project. They've killed at least one $50 million solar project. They are trying to keep the Tesla electric car from being sold in the state. These are corporate operatives running the Ohio government that have absolutely no concern about the public and couldn't care less about Ohio's competitive state in the technology of the modern world. So anybody listening from Ohio, the Public Utilities Commission is considering this gargantuan bailout for First Energy, and it needs to be stopped. So I will be writing about it. You can contact me. Go to the Ohio Public Utilities Commission website and write them. Come out to their hearings. But if they do this, if they go ahead and give the $3 billion to keep operating Davis Bessie and these old commercial coal plants, you know that Ohio is basically done for. It'll be a wasteland, a desert, and we'll all have to move to California. Anyway, Stephanie Spear, are you on the line?
I'm here, Harvey. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to the sermon about First Energy. I spared you participation in that. You are the genius editor of EcoWatch, which is a beautiful website wisely carrying my piece today about the nuclear terrorism revealed at Charlie Hebdo in France. And you, well, tell us the mission of EcoWatch.com. How long have you been operating and what you're trying to do there?
Yeah, so at EcoWatch, we're working to educate and motivate people to care about human health and the environment. So we do that by publishing environmental news, green living, and sustainable business articles. We're solely online. I've been publishing environmental news for 25 years, primarily as a newspaper girl, published EcoWatch Journal for nearly 9 years in Ohio, so primarily Ohio-based, but launched the online news site 3 years ago, which transitioned us to a global company. So we're busy every day having our finger on the pulse of everything green. and making sure that our readers stay abreast to what we feel are the most important environmental issues of the day.
Well, there you go. And you're in the media a lot. You have created this fabulous website. I remember I used to speak up in Cleveland, and you would show up with your newspapers and your two kids in tow. It was always a pleasure when you would come. And now you're entering the big, big world of the Internet. You've got this website out there, and you are a prime purveyor of ecological news. And you've been running my stories from time to time, including today's on Charlie Hebdo and nuclear terrorism. And it's just an honor to be on your site. Tell us today now, the big story, of course, globally was Charlie Hebdo and the 1 to 2 million people that turned out in France. I want to say, by the way, that the French people and the French government and the Prime Minister did an amazing thing as part of this. This is before, we're going to talk about the Keystone Pipeline and fracking, Stephanie, but I would be remiss to let this go by. There was an attack, of course, after Charlie Hebdo, and I assume some of those editors were Jewish, but then these terrorists attacked a kosher supermarket. And there are several hundred thousand Jews, I believe, in France. They were treated really terribly during World War II by the occupation French government. My mother-in-law, my wife's mother, was actually held in a concentration camp in France called the Gurs. And so the French and the Jews have had a troubled recent relationship. In 1791, the French Revolution gave Jews, Napoleon actually afterwards gave Jews equal rights, and well, many rights, let's put it that way, that they hadn't had before and did not have in other countries. A lot of anti-Semitism in France, many Jews have been leaving. And in the wake of this attack on this kosher supermarket, the French Prime Minister got up and asked the French Jews of France to not leave. And he said, and I'm going to paraphrase here, that France would not be French. France would not be France without the Jews. I find that tremendously moving. And I just wanted to make mention of that before we go deeper into our environmental issues. As someone who was born a Jew and practicing Buddhist, I do participate in Jewish things from time to time. And I was very moved by that. And I hope that the sentiment remains deep and sincere on the part of the French people. So, Stephanie, let's now jump in. After my story, you have major coverage of the Keystone Pipeline on your EcoWatch site. So will you please, and we have the rest of the hour to deal with this, with fracking, and with other environmental issues that you're featuring on your website, tell us what is happening with fracking. I'm sorry, with the Keystone Pipeline. I know the Senate has just taken action. People are pressuring Obama to veto it, which we think he will do. But tell us what's going on with the Keystone Pipeline, please.
Yeah, so toward the end of the year, the Keystone XL Pipeline came to a vote for the 9th time in the House and passed. Then it went to the Senate and failed. And so then the Republican majority said that the Keystone XL pipeline would be their first business that they'd take care of after the first of the year. Well, they kept their promise, and the vote did happen last week in the House, and it passed the House. And then now yesterday it went to the Senate for a vote to decide whether or not they wanted to continue on and proceed to a vote to finalize a Keystone XL pipeline bill. So it passed 63-32 yesterday to overcome a 60-vote threshold to begin debate on SB1. So if you have any C-SPAN fans as listeners, they may have been listening today to the Senate floor where senators were debating SB1. So I have one reporter right now working on a piece. She was busy listening most of the day as she was writing other stories for EcoWatch. So it will be a very powerful piece that will depict what happened on the debate of the Senate floor. I've been listening a little here and there. It's quite remarkable, I guess you could call it that. But anyway, it's likely
let's jump in here. If 63 senators voted for it, then for this horrible pipeline, and actually, pro forma, you know, we have to do this. I want you to describe next, as soon as I cover this, what the pipeline really actually is. But if 63 senators voted for it, that means at least 9 Democrats must have supported it. I think there's, 54 Republicans now?
10 Democrats and 1 independent were among those 63. Senator Angus King of Maine was the independent vote. And then 10 Democrats voted in favor. I will say, fortunately, we believe that the Senate will come short of the 67 votes it would need to override a veto by President Obama. So it's very likely they will not find those 67 votes to override a veto. And it's likely that they will vote on a final Keystone XL Senate bill this week or next.
Well, so tell us now exactly what is the Keystone Pipeline, please, and why are people so opposed to it?
Yeah, so we featured a piece today on EcoWatch by Robert Redford.
Being the actor.
Yes, Robert Redford being the actor.
Was he Butch Cassidy or was he the Sundance Kid?
I think
that's before your time. You're under
Sundance
100 years old.
Sundance Kid, right?
Was he the Sundance Kid?
Yeah.
He has the Sundance Festival, and so and Butch Cassidy, Paul Newman has passed away, but Robert Redford is still out there and he's still advocating for the environment. He still looks pretty good. As a matter of fact.
Yeah, so Robert Redford did a fantastic job. He's been a huge opponent of the Keystone XL pipeline. You know, the Keystone XL would carry the dirtiest oil on the planet from Canada through the American heartland. The vast majority of it would be shipped overseas. So envision this, right? Up in Alberta, Canada is the largest reserve of tar sands, the most corrosive oil on the planet. And it's very, very landlocked, and the Canadian government wants to extract it, extreme fossil fuel extraction, but they need to get it to a coastline because they want to ship it overseas. They really can't go west because of the mountains. They are trying to go east, and if the Keystone or when the Keystone XL pipeline fails, east is probably the direction they'll look. But they really want to go south. They want to take it through the breadbasket of America, get it to Texas, to the port. It'll be, what I hear, minimally processed here and shipped overseas. You know, a lot of people...
Describe for us, please, the nature of the tar sands that they're taking this oil from. What is the process that they're using to extract this oil from the ground?
So the majority of the tar sands region is boreal forest. And so there's been tremendous destruction of boreal forest. You know, it is extreme fossil fuel extraction to extract the oil from the Alberta oil sands. So as far as technology-wise, you know, it's hard to get to and even harder to transport because of its highly corrosive nature.
What does it do to take the oil out of the sands? I've seen some aerial photographs that are horrifying.
Yeah, you know, what I have heard, and I'm not an expert on extraction of tar sands, but I know that it's extremely energy intensive to extract the tar sands, so it takes a lot of energy to create that process of extracting the tar sands. I know that, you know, it is one of the most highly corrosive oils, and that is one of the issues with actually piping it out. The impact on potential oil spills as it corrodes the pipe. But I know there's been long-time battles in the Canadian regions fighting for native lands, for protection of water and air, and it's extremely polluting. It's taken over a very large region of Alberta, and, you know, has negatively impacted human health and the environment.
And you have some aerial photographs on the EcoWatch website showing what has happened to the areas when they are tar sand. I guess, what do you call the process? Extraction or?
Well, it is extraction. You know, like I said, a lot of the land was boreal forest. So you know, have a once pristine natural environment that has been completely clear-cutted, and the entire region, you know, has been transformed.
Well, transformed is a nice word. It's been turned into a horrifying wasteland, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, there are great aerial photos. Greenpeace has done a tremendous job on aerial photos as well. They have a whole array of images to, you know, really give a great sense. I mean, I tend to, when I see the tar sands, I think of the mountaintop removal in Appalachia. It's just complete, utter destruction of a natural area. In Appalachia and mountaintop removal, they're blowing off the tops of mountains to get the coal seams. You know, tar sands from you know, they also in mountaintop removal use dynamite to break up the mountains. I know that in the tar sands, though I've been on mountaintop removal sites, I've done aerial flights over Appalachia. I have not been in the tar sands region to see it firsthand, but from the photos, it just looks devastating.
Horrifying. Looks absolutely horrifying. It looks like the end of the earth as we know it. Let's put it that way. And also, of course, it's a huge emitter of global warming gases and massive quantities of carbon dioxide and methane coming out of this gargantuan hole gouged in the ground. I mean, essentially what they do, as best I can tell, is they pull the ground or the ore or whatever they got, and they melt it, or they put it under extreme pressure, which must take a huge amount of energy.
Yep, it's very energy intensive. And, you know, it just, you know, if you follow some of the money, it makes you understand better why Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is pushing for this. He raked in $608,000 from the industry for his 2014 campaign. A lot of this is all very well spelt out in Robert Redford's piece today. You know, they talk about jobs, that this is going to provide jobs. Everybody knows it's going to provide 35 permanent jobs.
35 jobs is all?
Permanent jobs. It will create 1,950 construction jobs for up to 2 years, but 35 permanent jobs. And that's been confirmed by everyone. That's part of the environmental impact statement, and that is in agreement. So sometimes you'll listen to the debates in Congress, and they're saying crazy things. But the truth is, it will provide 35 permanent jobs. This is not about creating jobs for the U.S. This is not about energy security for our country. This is about providing access to a foreign country, to Canada, to give them access to our breadbasket of our country so that they can get to our coastline and export it to foreign countries.
Unbelievable. Well, we're talking with Stephanie Spear. She's the executive director, creator and the producer and the editor-in-chief of EcoWatch.com, a leading provider of ecological coverage on the Internet. Stephanie, you'll stay with us, please, for the next half hour. It's a joy to have you on. You've been on before. You're always full of great information. And if we can, at the studio in New York, we'll take a short break here with Dana Lyons singing the Rocky Top version of the Soul Utopia song, and we'll be right back.
New plants, oil refineries, pipelines, mega dams, Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan, oil spill, meltdown, flood. suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam. Road rage, asthma, famine, leukemia, it's time to get a better plan. Solar Topia is home sweet home to me.
Thank you, Dana. Solartopia song by my buddy Dana Lyons, creator of Cows with Guns. Over 2 million views on YouTube with For Cows with Guns. And Dana's just a wonderful, fabulous musician and a great friend and a terrific environmental activist. We were talking with another one. I don't know if he's safe. Stephanie, do you sing like Dana Lyons?
No, but I love Dana Lyons. Longtime friend of more than 20 years. We used to hang out at first rendezvous.
yeah, he's the best. I haven't seen it for a long time, but anyway, Dana has our great albums out. He's got one called Three-Legged Coyote. I Googled Dana on the web. He's just funny, brilliant, great singer, great songwriter, the whole deal. And equally talented, the wonderful Stephanie Spear. You have created from nothing this wonderful website, EcoWatch.com. You are fighting tooth and nail to get a niche on the internet here, and your reportage is unique and invaluable, as they say. So give us the prognosis now on this insane, unconscionable, irresponsible, and insupportable Keystone XL project. What's going to happen?
Yeah, so, you know, like I said earlier in the show, it's being debated on the Senate floor. We're going to go live here probably in about 6:15 with a post about the back and forth debate on the Senate floor today. The Senate will take it to a vote this week, but looking more like next week because they have some retreats on Thursday and Friday. So, if and when, because it's very likely that it will pass the Senate, SB1, if it passes, then it goes to President Obama's desk. And like I said, it's unlikely that they'll have the votes needed in order to pass enough votes where it couldn't get vetoed by the president. President Obama has come out numerous times saying he will veto the bill. So it's very likely that President Obama will veto the bill. And right now on EcoWatch, we launched today a petition asking our readers to sign telling President Obama to please veto the Keystone XL bill. So I encourage you to check out EcoWatch.com. You can find the petition. It's about the fourth post down on the homepage. Tell President Obama, veto Keystone XL pipeline, make your voice heard, and sign on to that.
I'll take that. I'll link that to at my nukefree.org website. We'll get you on the activist, the take action section there as well. I also posted my today's piece on Charlie Hebdo and nuclear terrorism at nukefree.org. So now, Obama, assuming he comes through, the Senate would have to come up with 67 votes to overturn his veto, is that correct?
Well, it's really 67 votes would 67 votes would prevent him from being able to veto it. So that would give them enough votes where it wouldn't even, you know, it would just become law. So it's very unlikely that they're going to come up with those 67 votes. So it will very likely end up on President Obama's desk. He will, from what the Obama administration is saying, very likely will veto the bill. And, you know, where it will go from there, we'll see. There will definitely be some very interesting comments back from the Republican majority in the House and the Senate and Fox News. So we'll definitely be tracking that.
I won't be tracking Fox News, I'll tell you that. I don't waste my time with that crap.
You know, but it is so important that we step back for a minute and talk about the bigger energy picture here, because the Keystone XL pipeline sure has gotten a lot of ink. There's a lot of other pipelines out there. Like I said, they prefer, TransCanada prefers to go south, but they're also looking to go east. There's other pipeline companies that are working to finalize pipelines east. So this isn't like the one and only. And you know, with oil prices dropping, it's hurting the fracking boom. Renewables have been soaring, you know, but we just still, as Harvey, I know you're well aware of, we still just have not given the push that we need to really support, to create market certainty for renewable energy companies. So we really need an energy policy on the federal level that sets a renewable portfolio standard that says by 2025 we'll get, you know, X amount percentage of power from renewable energy. That will just skyrocket the industry. It'll give the market certainty that the wind and solar industry has been looking for so long. So fossil fuels are not the only way. You've been just remarkable for your entire career on educating people on the hazards and dangers of nuclear power, and clearly you must feel great because we have shown, and a lot of countries are going in other directions. Hopefully those couple plants in Georgia will never get built. And, you know, we just have to be forward-thinking and embrace cleaner renewable energy.
Well, unfortunately, of course, our home state of Ohio, you are in Cleveland and I'm in Columbus. I suppose congratulations are in order to us Ohioans for winning the national championship in football, except I went to Michigan. Uh-huh. And I really am so sick of college football. I can't even begin to tell you. So we will talk about that. We'll be the only two people on a major media outlet from Ohio not talking about that game yesterday. But nonetheless, Ohio. What's that?
It's surprising I even know who won, but I did.
Yeah. Well, I watched it. It was a really boring game, actually. Parts of it I watched. I am a Green Bay, for the record here, and this is important actually, I am a Green Bay Packers fan because the Green Bay Packers are the only professional team in the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, soccer, you name the sport, they're the only one that are owned by the community in which they operate. The town of Green Bay owns the Green Bay Packers. Now, this is a throwback that went back to the 1920s, since it's community owned, they actually sell shares. And a few years ago, I bought 3 shares in the Green Bay Packers. All professional teams should be owned by the communities in which they operate. And now college sports is just so corrupt and unconscionable to me what goes on in college sports. So, but, you know, as someone who used to play ball back in the day, it's painful to talk about. So we won't. We'll go something nice and easy like the environment. And the environment for us Ohioans has been absolutely raped and pillaged by this current legislature, which is doing its best to kill renewable energy. They stopped a major solar farm. They stopped a major wind farm. They're trying to drive Tesla out of the state. They killed $300 to $400 million for the restoration of train service between Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati. I mean, it's staggering to me what's happened here. But nonetheless, the renewable energy boom does proceed, and you at EcoWatch cover it greatly. So tell us, what's the most promising thing now that's happening? You mentioned that your phrase often used is renewable energy is booming. Tell us about this boom in renewable energy and your most important current posts at the site about green power.
Yeah. Wow. So we run a lot of positive renewable energy stories. There are a lot of great things going on. We ran this great piece that's done really well about five countries leading the way toward 100% renewable energy. Denmark.
What are those five countries?
Number one is Denmark. Denmark set world record for wind. Denmark set a new world record for wind production in 2014, getting 39.1% of its overall electricity from clean energy source. That's remarkable. That is something to celebrate.
It does not include nuclear power. Denmark has no nuclear plants. And the reason they have no nuclear power plants is because way back in the 70s and 80s, there was an anti-nuclear movement, a green movement in Denmark, and they successfully stopped nuclear power reactors from being built. So let's hand it to Denmark.
Yep, and you know, the latest figures on their wind generation puts the country on track to meet its 2020 goal of getting 50% of its power from renewables. So, you know, like I was saying before, we live in a country that doesn't have a federal energy bill, right? A federal renewable portfolio standard. Here in Denmark, they have a goal of getting 50% from renewables by 2020. That is just incredible. And we don't have that. We have it in different states. Because the federal government has failed to act, states instead have stepped up and they have renewable portfolio goals. But in this country, we don't have a federal one. And it really takes a federal bill to create market certainty in the renewable energy industry. I, on top of EcoWatch, I have a company, Expedite Renewable Energy, and I install solar and wind projects primarily in Ohio. And I'm a consultant helping companies through the many steps to invest in renewables. And I know firsthand how challenging it is to be a company owner when all the states have different policies. So if we could just pass a federal policy that would tell us, you know, what our goals are, it would change everything. So here in Denmark, the perfect example of a country that has a very progressive goal of 50% by 2020, and they are hitting that mark. In 2014, like I said, 39.1% of its overall electricity came from clean energy sources. I was extremely fortunate, I think we talked about it the last time I was on your show, to be in Copenhagen last fall. I was part of a climate change symposium with Sustainia, a Scandinavian think tank, but then I had the opportunity to go visit the island of Samsø in Denmark, the world's first island to generate all of its power from renewable sources, primarily wind. So Denmark is way ahead of most countries. Number two is the UK. UK wind power smashes annual records. Generation rose by 15%, and, you know, there's another country helping lead the way in renewable energy. Germany,
of course, in Great Britain, they're arguing, the current Prime Minister, David Cameron, who, you know, is a Neanderthal, by any stretch of the imagination, wants to build more nuclear plants there. It's a complete idiot, but that battle is going on in England. I don't think he's going to get away with building any more nukes, but that dialogue is happening. It's definitely nobody in Denmark is talking about building new nukes, that's for sure.
Yeah, and, you know, none of these countries, of course, are perfect. Denmark's probably the closest, but number three is Germany, and I know all of your listeners have heard about Germany being a leader, primarily in solar, you know, renewable energy was the biggest contributor to Germany's electricity supply in 2014, with nearly 26% of the country's power generation coming from clean sources. So, you know, that's incredible. They're quite cloudy of a country, and they don't have like sun like our California or Florida, but they've invested in renewable energy and it has paid off.
Wait a minute, Stephanie. I have to correct you on this. I saw, and I'm telling you the truth, I saw a Fox News program, and the Fox News commentator complained that the reason Germany has so much more solar renewable energy than the United States is because they have so much more sunlight in Germany. You must have missed that show.
Yeah, I've never heard that before.
Yeah, well, neither had anybody else. That's why that piece of footage went viral on YouTube after this idiot said it. But nonetheless, I have recently been to California, and they definitely have sunlight out there. So Germany is number three. And what is their goal in Germany? What's their set target for renewables?
You know, I know that they have a set target. I don't know that offhand. But they have made a dramatic shift toward clean energy.
And they shut eight reactors. After Fukushima, as you know, and we've written about this, I've had a few pieces at EcoWatch covering this. After Fukushima, the government of Angela Merkel did agree to shut eight of their 19 reactors. There are 11 left, and they're going to be going down gradually by 2022.
Yeah, and, you know, there's talk about, you know, Germany and their coal usage and building new coal-fired power plants. You know, none of these, you know, if you're getting nearly 26% of your energy from clean sources, you're still getting, you know, a lot from fossil fuels. So it doesn't happen overnight. What we have to be doing in this country is taking the right steps to transition as quickly as we can. And that's just something that we just haven't done yet. It seemed many years ago that we were very close to heading in that direction. In Ohio, which we could talk about if you want, we certainly were headed in the right direction. We took like two big steps forward, and we've now taken at least 10 steps back. But these countries, the one thing I love about this article is this shows that there are other ways. There are countries who are truly putting investment in renewable energy ahead of fossil fuels. Doesn't mean they're still not using them, still don't have some investment in them, but they're certainly setting goals to move their countries forward. I think Denmark, of all these countries listed here, you know, creates the best example. But Scotland's also listed on this list, as well as Ireland. Ireland hit new records for wind energy. And, you know, it's examples like this that, you know, give me hope.
Well, excellent. Now, are there any countries out? I mean, these countries are basically tied in the wind and solar. I know also that Germany has a feed-in tariff where they pay people a set amount for their renewable energy. Do these other countries have a feed-in tariff? Denmark and Scotland, Ireland, and UK?
I'm not sure exactly of their energy policy. So I'd have to do research on that. But they definitely have structures in place in order to encourage investment in the renewable sector.
Right. And the governor of California, Jerry Brown, now in his fourth term, has set very stringent goals also for taking California, which California would probably be about half the size of Germany, but it's about 32, 33 million people in California, but it's three times at least as big as Denmark. And so I think California is leading the United States in its move to renewables.
Yep. So a couple things on that, exciting things. You know, like you said, Governor Brown did just come out. He calls for 50% renewable energy by 2030. So again, you know, like I said, you know, there's these states like California that have come out with strong renewable portfolio standards, which has been extremely beneficial, but it still hurts the industry that we don't have something on the federal level. But on January 5th, Governor Brown came out, saying 50% from renewable sources by 2030. well beyond the current goal that they had set, which was 33% by 2020. He also proposed reducing use of gas to fuel vehicles by 50% and to also double down on energy efficiency in buildings. So he's come out really strong at the beginning of the year. And, you know, I like to think, because I've been so engaged for so long in the grassroots movement, I like to think that it's these organizations who roll their sleeves up every day that have really helped push forward these policies. And just starting yesterday, thousands of Californians are taking part in the California Crossroads Tour. This is a piece that we took live today, calling on Governor Jerry Brown to ban fracking, stand up to big oil, and move California beyond fossil fuels to 100% renewable energy. And so they're on a 9-day tour. Leaders from Californians Against Fracking are traveling to 8 cities as part of this California Crossroads Tour to provide an opportunity for community members and experts to speak out against the health and environmental impacts of oil drilling, wastewater injection wells, which in Ohio we sure have a lot of issues with those, and also the likelihood of increased oil by rail. And this evening, from 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, EcoWatch is featuring a live stream of one of these community gatherings. This one's in Los Angeles, and we're featuring a live stream of these community activists and community residents speaking out against fracking, oil drilling, and oil by rail. So you can check that out on ecowatch.com. It's the headline, Thousands Call on Governor Brown to Stand Up to Big Oil and Support 100% Renewable Energy. Best way also is to like EcoWatch on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and also sign up for our daily email. There's no better way to keep your finger on the pulse of the most important environmental news, and it's free. So you can sign up right in on any page of our website in the upper right-hand corner. So people have really been speaking up and, you know, telling Governor Brown how they feel. On February 7th in California, they're doing a march. It's called the March for Real Climate Leadership. They're going to bring thousands of people from across the state to the streets of Oakland. And, you know, so California, there is no question, yet again, is leading the way on energy policy.
Well, it's a good thing somebody is, and California has a tremendous amount of clout. And in this case, of course, it's both Northern and Southern California. L.A. has tended to be more conservative in the past, but I was recently in L.A., and boy, solar is just exploding. Of course, L.A. also has the advantage of having a municipal utility. The Los Angeles Department of Water and Power is owned by the public. And so we actually had a guy, we have a home in L.A., and he looked at the roof and is going to get back to us on how we can solarize there. But people are doing it left and right. It's a huge deal. Who else in the United States is pushing ahead with renewables in a significant way? Stephanie Spear, the editor, publisher, creator of the EcoWatch.com website. I'll ask you that. And also, Stephanie, we're down to our last 7 minutes, so I want to make sure you get in anything else you want to talk about. So please do.
Well, you know, one thing I'll talk about, you know, is this really great interview from Tom Hartman. Tom Hartman does just an amazing job. I'm bringing on amazing guests like you do as well, Harvey. And
we try.
There's a piece on EcoWatch. This is under our renewables vertical, our renewables tab, the war on solar. And this really gives a clear view as to why are we not, as a country, moving more rapidly toward renewable sources. And it's because people are fighting it. So Tom Hartman exposes the secret dirty war to stop solar power. He has Brendan Fisher. He's general counsel for Center for Media and Democracy on his show. This was late last week. And they talk about the war that has been waged on the renewable energy industry by ALEC, the Koch brothers, and Walmart's Walton family. And it's a really great interview to watch, and I think it really helps explain, you know, why we could take several steps forward and then 10 steps back.
Give us a quick thumbnail, Steph, of Stephanie Spear. Why? What is stopping solar in this country?
So, So we don't have a federal energy policy, so it's been up to the states to pass these renewable portfolio, their own energy bill. And so, like in Ohio, we passed SB 221, which mandated that 25% of energy comes from advanced energy sources. Of that 25%, 12.5% come from renewable sources. So what ALEC has done is they've come into Ohio with already industry-written legislation that actually, unfortunately, passed in Ohio, and it froze our portfolio standards. So it literally derailed our renewable energy policy, and this is what they're doing all across the nation. And because there's no federal energy policy, they go state by state. Of the more than 25 states that have renewable portfolio standards, they go state by state. They, you know, buy elections. And then they bring in this legislation and they try and pass it. Ohio has been the only state that has passed a bill, like an ALEC-funded bill. Kansas was able to derail it as well as some other states. But they're not giving up. They are working really hard to try and freeze or derail these renewable portfolio standards state by state. So,
and this is because
renewables work. Renewables work. They make sense. They create jobs. They provide a cleaner, healthier environment. And they are invested in the fossil fuel industry, and they don't. It's all about profit.
And so the people that have the Koch brothers and all these other multi-billionaire one percenters who have huge investments in fossil and nuclear fuels are trying to stop the technological revolution that's changing the world over the renewable energy that would also allow us to own it communally and would save our environment. Is that a fair summary?
Yep. It's just when you look at the way that the profit margins are marked, it's the fossil fuels that are still in the ground that are part of the spreadsheets for the future profits of these companies. So in their minds, they have no choice but to extract them. It's just the pure, profits that, you know, they plan to make. So the last thing they want to do is see renewables take over the world.
Well, you know what, Stephanie Spear, you and I are going to conspire with the Solartopian vision and your EcoWatch.com website to make sure that renewables do take over the world. You've been a great guest. Always a pleasure to have you on the work with you, Stephanie Spear. People go to EcoWatch.com. You can see my piece there today about nuclear terrorism and the Keystone coverage. Go there regularly to EcoWatch.com. Get signed up so Stephanie will keep you on the mailing list. Thanks so much, Stephanie Spear. Glad to have you with us. And you will be back again in Solartopia. Thanks to the crew in New York. No thanks to Skype, as always. And we will have another session next week. See you on the radio and see you in Solartopia. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Harvey. All over God's green world.